Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Blog Talk Radio Show, brought to you by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Kimmy Shopsoff. I'll be your host tonight, and I am a survivor of child abuse. Before we get started with the show, let me tell you a little bit about NASCA. Here at NASCA, we have a single purpose to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, physical or violent abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so from two perspectives. First, we educate the public, especially as getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. And we present the facts to show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. We also offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone who is interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Tonight's show is a question and answer open mic show. We have Dr. Jaime Romo calling in from San Diego, California, and he's absolutely amazing. Dr. Jaime is an educator, consultant, author, and a commissioned minister who promotes healing from abuse and the prevention of childhood sexual abuse, particularly in the religious authorities or the context of a religious setting. He wrote the workbook Healing the Sexually Abused Heart, a workbook for survivors, thrivers, and supporters. So it's always a pleasure to have Dr. Jaime with us. I see he hasn't called in yet, but hopefully he will. If not, we'll just have a question and answer and discussion. If you guys are listening and you'd like to join in the show, we'd love to have you. The telephone number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Here at NASCA, we're fighting for kids and serving adult survivors. Be aware, be a voice, be a hero, brave. We do have several people who have called in tonight. Hopefully, Dr. Jaime will call in soon. You know, he is a hospice minister, so sometimes he does get called up and he'll call in late, and that's fine. We absolutely love Dr. Jaime. We do have Pamela who has joined us from Louisiana. Good evening, Pamela. How are you?
I'm doing good, Tammy. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much. Thank you for calling in and supporting the show. I really appreciate it,
sure.
And it's always great to have you here.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We also have Mark from Louisiana. Good evening, Mark. How are you?
Well, I'm doing just fine, Tammy. How about you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. I'm actually still at work. My precious house person just came in and emptied my trash. She's absolutely wonderful. She takes good care of me. So there was a little bit of background noise. So I apologize for that. But she's a precious individual, and I'm lucky to have her in here helping me out. Thank you for being here, Mark. I look forward to the discussion. We also have Doug from Maryland. Good evening, Doug. Your mic is open. How are you?
Oh, okay. just relaxing. I'll find out tomorrow is now a federal holiday, so I made it through another work week.
Okay, yeah, that's right. It's June 18th.
Since it's on a Saturday.
I can't remember how to pronounce it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, good. For those people who have the day off, that's absolutely awesome. Enjoy your day. Well, hopefully we'll have some more callers who call in, 646-595-2118. But we'll go ahead and get started. Does anybody have anything that may be on their heart? We'll start with that. Any discussions in reference to adult survivors of child abuse anybody would like to bring up?
This is Pamela, if nobody has anything.
Go ahead, Pamela.
Okay. First, I want to just let Mark or Doug talk because, you know, we females can talk. So if Mark and Doug have anything, do y'all have something to discuss?
I don't have anything off the top of my head right now. No, I don't.
Okay. Well, I tell you, I had a situation last week that I'd love to share with you guys, if you don't mind. You know, we never know as survivors, as we get into our healing process, and when then we, if we migrate into the advocacy, we've talked about this a lot on the show, but I'll bring it up for any new listeners that we may have. You know, as we get on our healing journey, a lot of us get to a good point in our lives. You know, where we deal with it. It's always a part of us. But as we start advocating and helping other people, you know, we have to learn how to help those other people. When I first started dealing with, you know, what happened to me, I wanted to sing it from the mountaintops. And I wanted to give a lot of advice and anyone, you know, whether they wanted to hear it or not. And then, you know, I got to the point to where if someone will bring it up, yeah, I call it verbal diarrhea. I would just go on and on and on and on. Through my years and through some of the mistakes I've had in my wisdom, I have learned when to, you know, how to know, you know, when somebody shares something with me, you know, how much to share, when to cut it off. Well, I have a friend of mine. I won't mention any names. I'll just mention her first name because it's a common name. Her name is Tracy. We're sitting there at the local pub having a good time. And we're chit-chatting, and she's a close friend. She's on my Facebook. We talk all the time. Beautiful, beautiful lady about my age. And we're chit-chatting. And, you know, somehow the subject came up, and she shared, and you never know when somebody's going to share with me. And she had shared with me that, you know, that she would like to do something. She didn't know but quite what to do with her time. Her fiance had just passed. And she'd like to get involved in something. And I told her, I said, I can get you involved. And then she proceeded to share some of her story with me. And she said, well, I never thought I could do anything because I always thought I was dumb. My dad always called me dumb, stupid. She's from England. She's got English accent. And you could see her, you know, she wanted to talk. And as she, you know, and I would talk with her. And then she said, I can't talk about it. And then she'd talk about it a little bit more. You could see the tears in her eyes. And we were in a public setting. And she said, I can't talk about it. And I could just see her heart breaking. And, you know, and I wanted to give her some advice. But, you know, I learned a long time ago when they say that's enough, you know, I'll let them talk, you know. And if they ask me questions, I'll tell them. So, you know, I found myself in a unique situation where yet another friend had, you know, shared some of their painful past with me. And it's an honor. So, you know, I was proud of myself that I didn't go too far, you know, and you know, spew off the verbal diarrhea to her that a lot of us survivors can do, you know, a lot of us advocates can be guilty of doing. So does anybody have any thoughts on that? You know, have you been put in a situation where, you know, you were taken by surprise when someone to you? You know, that's my story. Does anybody else want to share?
This is Pamela.
Go ahead, Pamela.
Yeah, so what your question, you're wanting to know if I was ever surprised by somebody just
can you share a story?
Yeah.
You know, where something similar may have happened to you?
Yeah, I was going to a church, and I was sharing my book with some people, you know. And I'm like you, Tammy. I found out that some people can't hear it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they just, they don't want to hear it. But, you know, I let them know I had a book. Would you like a copy? And this particular lady, who was the pastor's daughter's mother, the pastor's mother-in-law, and we kind of got close, you know. And I gave her a copy of my book, and she told me that she had never told anybody. She had to be older than me. Probably I'm 64, she's probably in her 70s, and said something happened to her, and that, you know, she's never shared it, and, you know, I could tell that she was just, you know, just like, I mean, she didn't seem to be like your person, heartbroken. She seemed like a strong woman, I guess her faith, you know. But, you know, that was kind of shocking to hear that this woman at that age had gone through something like that. But we both know that back in those days, nobody talked about it. Oh, boy. I mean, we're barely touching the surface of the iceberg right now, right?
Well, you might know my friend Tracy is a happy-go-lucky, very strong woman. It took me by surprise, you know, just, and I could just see the pain on her face. You know, it just took me by surprise. Doug, what do you think? Have you ever been in a situation or have you ever shared with somebody that, you know, made a connection with someone who was a fellow survivor?
Well, I go... There's a phone line I've been going to for 8 years called Survivors of Incest Anonymous, Coming Home Phone Line. And there are some groups on Facebook. I used to go to one called MaleSurvivor.org, but they changed their platform several years ago. But I told a few people, but it's just hard to deal with all the anger. I mean, it's just like primal 3 to 5 year old anger. Hate and rage, and you know, I've been struggling with this most of my life. I mean, since I was at least 12 or 13 years old, and back to 85, 86. So, you know.
Well, I'm so glad you found the NASCA organization and that we can be here to help each other and serve each other. You know, you have a right to be angry. You know, a lot of people don't understand that. You know, I was angry, and I still go through anger sometimes. What people did to us that they didn't have a right to do to us, you have a right to be angry. They robbed your childhood. They, took your ability to, infringed on your trust. So, but we can work through it. We definitely can work through it. Is there anything that we can do to help you on your healing journey at this point, Doug?
Just continue to exist and, I guess, let me share my story and let me be honest about how I really feel about things. Because the one thing that always bothered me was I felt a lot of times people were always telling me how to think and to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I hated that. And people, it was just like I was living a lie. It's like I was an actor.
Right.
And I'm a very good actor. But, it's like people didn't want to hear the truth. A lot of times I felt certain members of the mental health profession didn't want to hear the truth. And it's like, mm-hmm. Well, if you don't want me to be honest, then what's the point? I mean, the only way I'm going to, survive and have some sort of, to be able to survive and thrive outside of what I went through growing up is to be honest with myself and other people. And unfortunately, from my point of view, people are like, no, you're wrong. And, well, I don't know how to respond to that. If I can't be honest about how I feel and think, then mm-hmm. there's no point to anything. Then you're just playing make-believe. Then, so.
Right.
And, it's fun playing make-believe. When I was younger, sure, it's fun to play make-believe and act. But if I want to be the man I want to be and, grow up and integrate and whatever, I have to learn to be honest with myself. And
sure. Well, you brought up a good point. People try to tell us how to feel and what we should feel and what we shouldn't feel. We have a right to feel how we feel. Us as survivors, we try to help people heal and nudge along, because we have a right, like I said before, we have a right to be angry. But if you stay in the anger, then, you'll have an angry life, hopefully. But who's to say how long who's to tell us how long we're supposed to be angry? How dare anybody tell us that? Other than if you see it for him floundering in it, that's a different story. But we have a right to be angry, and we have a right to be angry until we work through our issues. We have those people who tell us, well, that happened long ago. Why are you dwelling on it? Can't you forget the fact? I had my mother. I love my mother, but with my stepfather. Can't you forget the past? Why do you have to keep bringing it up? Why? Because it still hurts. Because it's still raw. Because you hadn't acknowledged what he did. So I get what you're saying, very much so.
Well,
Mark or Pamela? Go ahead.
You know, 9/11 happened almost 20 years ago now, but people are going to remember that, and people always remember the Kennedy assassination or Pearl Harbor or Columbine, and it's just be like the same thing. Well, why can't you just get over that? It's like, well, it was a horrible terrorist attack or a horrible school shooting. It's almost like, I don't know what to say. It's like, well, why can't you get over certain things? It's just like, because it doesn't work that way. Late Christopher Reeve, he had a horrible horseback riding accident. He was never able to walk again.
Well, one thing I have noticed, and not with everybody, but I feel, and maybe I'm taking my personal experience, but I've seen a common thread in some folks that I have interacted with. A lot of times we can't get over it. I mean, we will never forget it, and we have a right, and it becomes a part of who we are. But until we get that validation, and sometimes we have to give ourselves the validation. I'll never get the validation that I need from my grandmother. I'll never get the validation in full from my stepfather. My grandmother's dead, so, I've had to get the validation from my Nazca family, and I've had to get my validation from myself. She didn't have a right to do what she did. She'd have a right to beat me. He didn't have a right to touch me. They were wrong. How dare they? Once I got that validation, I could move past some of the anger. because, you know, and, you know, I and we slide back sometimes. You know, I'd gotten to the point to where my grandmother never acknowledged what she did. I was always, you know, less than in her eyes, always, especially compared to my sister. But I had come to deal with it. I even visited her once or twice when she was in the nursing home. But when she died, you know, all that – I was in Louisiana, by the way, Mark and Pamela. I was in Shreveport. And I was actually on my way back to on my way to Savannah. And I was, you know, on the way back, I was driving a U-Haul leaving Shreveport. And I just remember being so angry. And I just, you know, and I even, you know, even at that point, I remember telling myself, I haven't been this angry about it in years. But just the death of her and knowing that I will never get that validation from that woman for what she did to me just brought all that anger back to me. And I had to work through it once again. So I get it. I certainly get it, Doug. Pamela or Mark, do y'all want to comment on what Doug has talked about or what we've talked about so far?
Yeah. I do.
We'll go to Mark because he hadn't talked, and then we'll go to Pamela.
Okay. I just wanted to say to Doug, I said, this is the place to talk, and don't worry about people telling you to get over it on this show. So you talk and you share, and however long it takes for you to get it out, that's fine because everyone here is behind you. Everyone here supports you. Everyone believes you. We know it wasn't your fault, and we know that it's tough. You're right. You know, everyone remembers all these serious, traumatic events that went on in the world, but, you know, each of you have a traumatic event that went on in your own life, and you may never forget about it, but I just want to encourage you to keep calling in. You, like I said the other day, you've been calling in a lot, and now I think you know that you have a safe place to talk, and the more you talk, you will get stronger, and you will get better. You will rise up, and you'll be able to share in that pain, and that anger will slowly dissipate, but you will always have that, but in your, you know, remembrance, but you'll be able to get past a point where you can now be an advocate. You can now be strong and speak out and not worry what other people say. You know, and I just wanted to encourage you in that. And I think, check me if I'm wrong, Pam, but, you know, isn't anger part of the, like, the steps of experiencing your loss of your sexual innocence, you know, as far as, you know, like the death and dying thing, isn't anger one of them? It's just a stage that you go through. Everyone has gone through and is going through it now that you will overcome. You will get better. You will get stronger. But this is a place to talk. Don't worry. You can talk here because everyone believes you. Everyone's on your side and we support you.
Yeah, that's right. And what you were saying, Mark, is what I'm finding and what I found through going through getting my master's in social work when I saw a lot of theories, I correlated the loss of my sexual innocence and the loss of my, you know, innocent childhood, you know, and the loss of whatever I could have become, you know, had I not been so tormented and terrorized, you know, throughout my life, you know, I found out that I was grieving that I had to grieve it, okay? I never knew that until I started studying Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and her stages about death and dying and loss. And I correlated that with, like, a loss of a loved one or loss of, you know, a career or loss, just loss in general. And, you know, we had loss of love and loss of parenting. And, I mean, so much loss, okay? And we have to deal with that when we're, and think about that as we're trying to heal. And we will, if you look at those stages, denial, anger, bargaining, you know, depression and acceptance, we flow in and out of all of those, okay? Denial, especially because we wanted to deny we were this was even happening to us, okay? As a child, how did we even get through it? Because as one of the coping mechanisms is denial. And so we have to try to grieve and go through that denial process and process it, you know, and then the anger, you know, it's a process. And you know, it's just saying, I'm angry at what I lost, right? I'm angry at who did this to me and caused me to be different than I could have been, you know. I could have been something even more, you know, not that I'm not thankful for what I have and who I am today, but, you know, I could have been president of the United States today. Who knows, you know? That's just, you know, I don't want to be silly, but, you know, who knows what I could have accomplished? Who knows what you could have accomplished, Tammy and Doug and, you know, Mark?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, people set us back. It's like having a disability, you know? Yeah.
Well, you know, I have a different perspective on it. I really do, and I appreciate that. And everybody has a right to those feelings. They really do, and they're understandable and justifiable. Me, I have a little bit of a different take on it. You know, I may not have the character that I have now had I not gone through anything, and I would never wish what I went through on anybody. Nobody deserved what I had. But God's got a plan for me. And, you know, as long as it's a Bible quote, God will make good of all things for those who trust in him. And so I have to trust that God knows my heart, and, you know, it may have taken a different path, but, you know, I wouldn't be on this call. I wouldn't know you guys. And I know what you said, Pamela, that, you know, we're not grateful for, it's not that we're not grateful for where we are now. But who knows? I mean, I could have been a lesser person, a lesser character, you know, had it not happened to me. So at my point, you know, because I can't undo it. It's done. For whatever reason, that's where the cards were folded out for me. But it also, you know, gave me a chance to serve God in a way that I probably would have never experienced before. And I know it's making lemonade, but that lemonade is sweet to me now. And it hasn't always been sweet. I have had those feelings. What could have happened to me if my grandmother hadn't told me I'm dumb, I'm stupid, I'm worthless, this world would be better off had I never been born? You know, it did set me back. But who knows? I mean, who knows? We can't. You know, we can. You know, we can look back and, you know, second guess ourselves. I don't think. That, you know, that's the path I want to take, because I have to trust that God invested in me. And I know NASCA is not, you know, a religious organization, but I am a woman of faith, and I have to trust that God trusts me, you know, with the hearts and the souls of the people that are on this phone call right now on this show, the people who may be listening. You know, what an honor that is to serve God in the way that he's allowed me to serve, just because of the heartache that happened to me that is somebody else's sin. It's not God's sin. It's not my sin. You know, God didn't put me through that. It was, you know, some evil act of somebody else, you know, somebody else's stupidity and ignorance, selfishness, whatever you may want to call it. But I truly believe in my heart that God, you know, invested in me anyway. And he brought me to heights that I would never have reached before. You got your master's degree. Right. Who knows? You may not have gotten your master's degree had that not happened to you. You know?
I've got two master's degrees.
Yeah, well, I'm you know, I'm going back to school. I'm about to get my doctorate. By the end of the year, I'll be Dr. Shelfstall. Yep, absolutely.
Oh,
you know, who would have thought that dumb, stupid kid would be would be so close to being a doctor one day? But God, you know, he invested in me, and he's going to invest, you know, if we allow him, he'll invest in Doug. I don't know what Doug's religious and spirits, you know, or, you know, the universe or whatever, you know, whatever whatever, whatever anyone believes. Yeah. You know, that's just my personal belief. What do you guys think?
Well, I just wanted to say, Timmy, that I met Doug about 2 years ago, and we've kind of been talking. I talked to him about NASCA, and we've become close friends. He lives in Maryland. I live in Louisiana, but we are very close friends now. And I just wanted to say Doug did pray the prayer to accept Christ, and he is a Christian now. So I just wanted to say kudos to Doug.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, here at NASCA, we welcome all Christians, Jews, Muslims, gender, transgenders. We welcome everybody. You know, we have a transgender who calls in every once in a while, and I absolutely adore him. He's wonderful, Lakeisha. We're all inclusive. The common thread we have here at NASCA is, that we're survivors or like Mark, or supporters of survivors, and we're here to help each other heal and bring awareness to the evils of child abuse. So you're here to NASCA. We know we have a lot of folks streaming in. Dr. Jaime is usually here. Something must have happened to him. You know, he is a hospice pastor, so he can get called at any time to go to the bedside of someone who was that we're about to lose. So I'm sure it's something like that with Dr. Jaime. So we'll just carry on, but we could definitely use the support if anybody is streaming, and we know we have a lot of people who stream in. The number is 646-595-2118. Please feel free to call in. Thank you so much for that. Pamela, if you want to carry on, do you have some thoughts that you have? And then we'll give everybody a chance. Like I said, before you go, not like I said because I hadn't said it, but please, everybody know this is an open mic show. All the mics are open, so just feel free to join in. Just say your name first so the people who are listening can follow through, and we'll go from there. Pamela?
Okay. I wanted to go back to something you mentioned, and it's about validation. I kind of wanted you to expand on validation. We hear that word over and over and over again, but what does it really mean to a survivor? I have an example of validation in my life, and I'll just give you a quick run through. I had a civil suit with my abuser, and when it went to the first judge to keep the case going, or to even bring the case before the judge, he actually apologized from the bench that I had to go through that, and that he was so sorry. Can you imagine me getting a judge sitting on the bench telling me he was sorry for what I went through and believed me? Now, that's a definition of validation. And, what happened was immediately in my mind, this is my thought, I'm not crazy.
Well, that's wonderful. That's you're very blessed to have that. First of all, I'm going to give you an example of the denial of validation, and then I'll go into what my idea of validation is and maybe give an example. You know, what happened to me, which I knew what happened to me when I was 18, I didn't fully understand it, but I knew that my grandmother was very cruel to me, and I knew, that she beat me, and, I was less than my sister, and, my mother, she finally remarried and married my stepfather, and then I had a whole different type of abuse that I had to deal with, several types of abuse I had to deal with. So, of course, through my, got into drugs, got into dropout, I dropped out of high school, got into some unhealthy relationships, ended up getting pregnant, quit the drugs. My ex-husband didn't quit the drugs. So then I was, an outcast with all my friends, because who, if you're getting high, who wants to hang out with the person who doesn't get high? No one. Not you know, you have to find a different group. I mean, you can still be friends with them. I've learned, you know, the hard way. You can still have friendly relations with them. You just, you know, they don't want to hang out with you, and you don't, you know, you lose your commonality. So then I had my first baby, and my ex-husband's sister, Bible thumping Christian, rich. My ex-husband was out doing dope all the time, and we ended up losing the house we were living in, and we had to move in with John's dad, and his sister Rebecca came over, and we were chit-chatting one day, and she was helping me with the baby, and, you know, she had reached out to me. I was probably 21, 22 at the time, and we were chit-chatting, and I basically, the first person that I confided in and told her what happened to me, not so much with my grandmother, but what my stepfather tried to do with me. And her being a Christian, her being, you know, me looking up to this person that's supposed to be a Christian, that her husband's, you know, a deacon and she's in the church and trying to get John and me into church, you know, I thought I'd get a different reaction. And I didn't know. Now I know how to advise somebody how to react. But when I told her, it was, and she didn't know what to say, and she was uncomfortable. You know, looking back, she may have had her own skeletons in her closet. I don't know. But I did not get the reaction that I thought I was going to get. I thought she was going to hug me. I thought she was going to give me and say, honey, I'm so sorry you went through that. You know, oh, you poor dear. But, you know, oh, my gosh, you know, what can I do to help? That's what I expected. That's not what I got. What I got was someone who couldn't get out of there fast enough and treated me like I had a scar from the rest of the time I was married to this man. You know, for the next few years, I had a scarlet letter. I always felt like I was gossiped about. I never got the, you know, I'm so sorry. I never got the hug. You know, I was basically, you know, ostracized, you know, not directly, but, you know, I never felt comfortable around that woman again. She never felt comfortable around me again. And all I thought, you know, that, you know, her being so intertwined in the church that, you know, she would help me and, you know, understand. Give me the validation. Give me the hug. You know, say, I'm so sorry you had to go through that. So to me, that's an example of denying me the validation that I need. Back then, I didn't know it was validation. I just thought I wanted compassion. I wanted somebody to hug me. I wanted somebody to love me. I wanted somebody to care about me. I wanted somebody to, you know, to cry for the little girl that I, you know, that was in me that you know, got hurt. It didn't happen. So it's an example of, to me, was somebody denying me validation. You know, to me, validation, again, you know, is, you know, later on. And, of course, I didn't go to church. You know, the last place I wanted to go to church because, you know, it soured me on the church. Well, this woman's supposed to be a churchgoer. How could she treat me that way? You know, what kind of church is this? I know now not to blame the church. You know, it had nothing to do with the church. It had nothing to do with religion. It had to do with this lady's personality. Possibly even there was something in her family background that made her uncomfortable. Don't know, don't care at this point. But, you know, throughout the years, you know, I think it was back then, by the time I got into my early 30s, I started dealing with it again. You know, by the time that I've gotten divorced and, you know, I realized what happened to me and I started dealing with it and I started getting involved in other things. And, you know, the second time I told somebody was at the Dickerson House Center, a wonderful facility, the Dickerson Center for Abused Children, which is basically a bunch of rich women, you know, going out doing outings to earn money for this organization, which is a wonderful cause. I thought that was going to be a good place to get a little validation. I didn't. You know, they kind of looked at me like, oh, you know, I felt like, oh, well, you know, we don't want to intertwine with you. You know, we don't want to hear about that. We're just collecting money for the little people. That's the way I felt. But it wasn't until, you know, I got into other facilities and other, you know, around other people and connected with some other survivors. Probably the biggest validation I got was with my friend Eve. Let me see if Dr. Heine's here. No, when I got with my friend Eve, and that's, you know, I'm just going to use her first name. I went to work for a company, and this woman was so mean and so bitter, and everybody talked about her, and she was just so guarded and so nasty. And for whatever reason, you know, we started getting a little bit of a work relationship, and we ended up going to the Red Lobster. I'll never forget as long as I live. We went to the Red Lobster. And, I could spot it from a mile away because when you grow up in it, you can spot it. You know, when you've been sexually abused and you can see, you know the patterns. And so I kind of suspected it with Eve. And so we went to lunch that day at the Red Lobster, and I confided in her. You know, and I had to tell her, Eve, and I didn't know it was called a survivor back then. I told her, I'm a victim of child abuse. And the girl busted out in tears. There on the spot, busted out in tears. And she ended up telling me her story, and her story was horrible. Her mother would, a drug addict would, trade her for drugs, pick her up 6 weeks later. The man that she traded her for would keep her locked in a closet and only pull her out to bathe her, throw some food in there. She stayed in a dark closet and only came out long enough to bathe and serve him. Saw a little daylight when he threw some food in at her, and that was it. I mean, it was a horrible story. But she was the first person that gave me the validation that hugged me and said, Tammy, I understand. I went through it too. That was the first time I got validation from anyone after being denied the validation prior to that. And then when I hooked up with Bill, when I got involved with NASCA, I got people that says, but just like Mark gave us a prime example. What did he just tell Doug? We understand. We're there for you. We'll listen to you. We get it. We'll support you. You didn't deserve that. You have a right to be angry. So that's my take on it. I'll be quiet now. I'll leave it open for everybody else. Anybody else?
Well, that was perfect. I just want to say something about what you were saying and to you about that. That's a perfect example, Tammy. I love what you said, the denial and then the acceptance. But what you see the difference was the other lady, you don't know for sure that she was abused, and she maybe wasn't abused enough or wasn't abused at all, and that's why she denied. But the other one, that you talked to as a survivor. So, we have found as survivors, talking to people that aren't survivors, they don't want to talk to us. They're the last people that want to talk to us and hear our stories. But survivors have compassion and empathy for each other.
Right. Well, with her being, I was married to her baby brother, and I know the dysfunction in their family. I think there was a lot of hidden secrets in their family, that I won't get into now. But, I didn't know it at the time. I was devastated. But knowing what I know now, there was probably, dirty secrets in their family that sometimes they just closed up. Could be that she just closed up and wasn't ready to deal with it. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But I got it. We're going to get more empathy from fellow survivors, absolutely.
That's all.
Oh, well, I just wanted to chime in off of what Pam said about, sharing her story of validation, because I was standing right there as well. And my side of it, from my perspective, I'm usually cynical about justice and politics, and I usually don't trust, but when this judge, and this is my observation for Pam, when he looked her in the eye from the bench in full garb and everything and said that to her, I was so happy, because for her, I knew what that meant for her. And from my being, the support side of it, I was just so glad that she got validated like that from a person in the justice system. And that just made me feel really good for her, So I know when she's talking about it from her end of it, but as a supporter side, I was just really, really glad that that happened. And that was a good moment. I don't think we'll ever forget that moment.
Well, how about you, Doug? What do you think about all this?
It's it's hard to talk about this. I mean, this is really, I mean, the things that many of us experienced was just pure evil. And, you know, it's like I said before, if somebody survived 9/11 or lost somebody in 9/11 or a school shooting, it's like, oh, they get sympathy. But it's like, or you know, but this, it's like, it's almost, how do I put it? It's, you know, I read somewhere, my therapist kind of confirmed this, that it's like 90, if it happens to a child, 93% of the time it's someone the child knows. And, you know, they all want to, you know, the whole thing, a stranger danger. It's like some fear-guzzling pervert who lives out in the sticks or whatever, and, you know, it's always like that's stereotype, but it is harder when it's family, and, you know, it's like people don't want to believe it. And
absolutely.
Yeah. And it's like, well, you know, I mean, and if you report something, I mean, when I was 13, I went to my guys, I told him my home life was so whacked out, I couldn't deal with it. I mean, he's like, well, when are you going to stop whining about it? And I pulled all sorts of crap. I got into a lot of fights when I was in middle school and was breaking things around the house. And I'll admit, I used to hit my sister all the time. And I asked for help. And I was told no. And no, so it's just like, well, what do you want? I asked for help, and I was told no. So,
yeah.
And even some of the therapists who did help me out when I got older, they had their own agenda of, you know, promoting your own personal, political, religious agenda. And it's just like, and, you know, I could say the therapist I saw when I recovered the memory, she did, you know, always save my life and get me back on track. But at the same time, when I stopped seeing her, I felt like I got out of a bad relationship. So, you know, it just leaves a bad taste in my mouth. And, you know, you try to explain people like, well, this bothered me because of this. And it's like, it just seems like so often people do not listen. And it's just like, well, then it's like we can't have a healthy relationship. And, you know, so much of my life has been smoke and mirrors. And like I said, you tell people how you think and feel, and people just tell you you're wrong. It's like, oh, how can your thoughts and feelings be wrong?
They're not. They just don't want to hear about it. Go ahead, Pamela.
Doug, is there anybody that you have, you know, in your support system besides, you know, online support? You know, we're here for you and you can call us. But is there anybody around you that you've been able to talk to? Not a therapist. I'm talking about somebody, you know, like Tammy was able to talk to, you know, another friend that was a survivor. Have you ever been to a survivor support group or anything like that?
There was one that I went to many years ago. The problem was is it met on a Sunday night from like 7 to 8:30, and it was over an hour away. So that was the problem there. I do, like I said, there are phone support groups, obviously NASCA, and Survivors Incest Anonymous, and there are some support groups on Facebook, and there's also plenty of, you know, good things like on YouTube. I mean, I've told a few friends, but yes, it is hard because, you see, I know people have told me, well, Doug, don't think you can't get married and have children or whatever, because, but it's like I know myself. I know how I feel. I know how I think. I know, and look, one thing for me is like, it's like, no, I don't want children because I'm struggling enough to take care of my own inner child parts and everything.
Sure.
And it's very hard for me to let someone get close and to share my space with another person. So I don't.
That's understandable.
Thank you.
Well, Doug, you know, a couple things that's going through my mind. Some of the stats, you're absolutely right. With people, you know, they don't understand it is hard when it's your family. Just throw out a little bit of stats. I don't want to get hung up too much on stats, but we know that 90% of the children who are sexually abused are abused by somebody they know. 67 to 70%, if not more, is by a family member. And the rest of the 90% is, you know, a coach, a friend, a neighbor. And people don't understand that, you know. We've come a long way with child trafficking and stranger danger. But when you start talking about incest and you start talking about family members, oh, you know, that's taboo. You know, they don't want to talk about it. They don't believe it. You know, and then the family members, like, how dare you tarnish the family? As a society, we're getting better about that. But you're absolutely right. It's tough because those are the people that are supposed to love and protect you, and those are the people who have let us down. Everybody on this call, you know, with the exception of Mark. Mark's a, you know, he's a supporter of his wife, Pam. But, you know, with, you know, the rest of us, you know, the feelings of betrayal is just, you know, unbelievable. It is hard when it's a, you know, to get past that when we've been betrayed and, you know, invest in a relationship. You know, I'm single myself. I mean, I'd love to have somebody to grow old with, but, you know, I'm not sure if I'll ever find that partner. And I've had to depend on myself for so long. You know, I'm 56 years old. I'm kind of set in my ways. But, you know, there are some support groups like you've talked about and some suggestions Pam gave you. But, you know, you've got some support right here at NASCA, and that's why we have this organization, so we can be there for each other. So if there isn't another organization anywhere available, you have us. You know, you have the people who are on this call. So don't ever forget that, and we understand. And we're here to help each other heal. We have a right to our, you know, how dare, you know, people say that. Well, get over it. You know, get over it. You know, don't, you know, or, you know, and, you know, we've had several people, and this just makes my blood boil. And one of them has passed away. I'll just say her first name, Laura. Laura was in, I think she was in Washington State. I can't remember. Pam, you probably remember. I think she was on the call when you joined us. But, you know, as a teenager, just like you, she went to help, you know, as a young woman. And her therapist basically said, well, you are old enough to know better. You know, you shouldn't have let it happen. How did you let that happen? And I just, when she told me that, I mean, I wanted to fly up where she was, look that lady up, and just beat the hell out of her. You know, how dare you tell them that, you know? And especially a therapist. That's why we have to be really careful who we trust. You know, as a therapist, we need a trauma-trained therapist, someone who understands and can deal with it. And if they say, anybody listen, if somebody says something that like that to you, get your money back and go to the next one. Go find somebody else. But there is a lot of support out there. No one more than us here at the NASCA family. So that's all I have to say. Anybody else?
Oh, I wanted to say some good news. Our governor, Governor John Bel Edwards here in Louisiana, just signed the HB 492 bill that was passed by all the senators and all the House members, all of them to zero, all were yays. And that bill says no statute of limitations on criminal child abuse, child sex abuse. And then it also opens up a 3-year window to go back and revive a claim civilly. And I had a civil claim that I before, and now I can go back and reclaim. So I'm meeting with my attorney again Monday, and we're going to refile it.
Absolutely amazing. Well, I wish you the best. I wish you the world with that. So I don't want to say good luck because that sounds terrible, but I wish you success in you know, pursuing that. You know, it's something Doug said, you know, when you go to the system and you report it and they do nothing, I mean, there's nothing, you know, that just damages the child further. You know, our founder tells us a story, and I can't, you know, I don't want to speak for Bill, but, you know, Bill, you know, had an issue in the Catholic Church, and when he went and told another priest, he got the same thing from that priest and more, you know, and,
right.
You know, how do you, you know, that is just, that's further damaging to the child, especially if you go to a child like Doug said he did at 13 and got nowhere. You know, who do you go to? You go, you know, you have the courage. I mean, most people don't tell. Doug, you're very strong. You're very strong, to courageous and brave to go tell somebody, because most people at that age don't. So, you need to understand that what you did was very brave. Unfortunately, you know, if it fell on deaf ears and people just tried to sweep it under the rug, I got up the courage. I told somebody, and they told me to sit down and shut up. You know, how damaging can that be? I can only imagine how you felt. So,
I don't know if Doug wants to share, but he's got a pretty bad story. I mean, mine was a. Well, it was my mother knew about it. She married a pedophile and knew he was a pedophile and allowed him to have me for 14 years. And he was not my biological father. He was her second husband. But to have somebody abuse you that is your biological parent, I can't even imagine. I cannot even imagine.
Happens all the time, my love. Well, you know, we do have 30 minutes left. We do have 30 minutes left. I think at this point, you know, something must have come up for Dr. Jaime Romo. He's always here. But I know that, you know, I know what he has to deal with, being a hospice pastor. So we do have 30 minutes. If somebody would like to share a little bit of their story, that's if somebody wants to share, we're willing to listen. You know, we've got about 20 minutes of time to get into the meat of, you know, if anybody does want to share. I'll just say that. It's up to you guys. Either one of you.
Doug, would you like to share something?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't, well, certainly know the words to describe the sexual abuse, but I was, my parents, it was a very nasty divorce, and I mean, my father was just constantly giving me grief about my mother, and I was 13, and I'm like, well, you know, it's all mom's fault, you know, and it got to a point where I nearly, you know, trigger alert, I was ready to attack and hurt my mother. And she had to have a talk with him, and my father kind of talked to me, okay, maybe, you know, but I came close to hurting my mother. And, you know, that's, And like I said, you know, I saw a psychiatrist at Rutgers, and he was like, well, if you just tell people what they're doing is bothering you, but it's like, it seems to me, most of the time, people do not listen. They just say you're wrong, and then that's it. And they don't care if their actions get you thrown in jail or get you killed. It's like, you know, you know, there's a difference between respect and fear. Maybe I feared certain people, but that's not respect. That's fear. Because then there could be, you know, negative consequences towards me of if I don't obey or pretend to act the way someone wants me to act and think. But
what hurt you the deepest, Doug, as far as what your parents did to you?
Well, one, it was just a betrayal. The home was not a safe place, and the family mantra was there was always something about Doug that wasn't right, and that goes back to when I was like 3 to 5 years old. And then again, it was the whole thing, well, Doug doesn't understand people care about him, but people are always hurting me. And, well, trigger alert, I felt like trying to get into my pants, and it's like, well, you don't understand people care about you. And it's like, well, if people cared about me, they wouldn't be doing those things. So, and, you know, I felt people looked down upon me. Even though that I'm more, like, spiritual than religious and everything, I mean, I do believe in God and, you know, we're put here on this earth for a reason, and we're supposed to, like, try to help other people out and do charity work and all those things. And I just felt that my father and other people in the neighborhood looked down upon me because I wanted to do that. It's like I felt people wanted me to be like, I'm sorry, I'm just going to say it, you know, another trigger alert, like a hoodlum or a hooligan or a violent hooligan or, like, a creep or... And it's just like, you know, why would anyone want a child to grow up to be like that? It's just almost like somehow, you know, it's like you're less of a man or you know, or you're a wimp or you're a loser or you're a no one because you pray to God and you want to do charity work. I mean, that's just I felt this way since I was a child. So.
So your parents were Jewish, right? They were.
Yes.
And were they devout in their religion?
No, but it's not that, you know, we didn't go to temple. I mean, when I was younger, it bothered me, but it's just that I felt that my father looked, it was a spiritually dead home. You know, I mean, it's like my father didn't understand that sometimes, like my sister and I, we would say, you know, we'd have our mood swings, feel cranky and moody and whatever, and we would give each other hugs to cheer each other up. Now, we're not talking about, like, government welfare programs or whatever. We're talking about a brother and a sister looking out for each other and giving each other hugs and kisses, love and kindness to cheer each other up through the, you know, when we get cranky and moody. And if she wasn't feeling good, I just let her spend time in my room. And if I wasn't feeling good, she would spend time in my room and keep me company until I felt better. And my father, he literally did not understand that. You know, it's like a car needs gas to run. People, to be happy, do need love and kindness. I mean, it's not a political thing. It's just, you know, just common sense. But it was almost like somehow, well, this, you know, but we got to figure out why Dougie needs those things. And it's like, well, everybody needs those things. I mean, that's just human decency and everything.
From what you tell me before, your parents were not decent people. They were pretty evil as far as what they did to you, right, as a child?
They both had complex PTSD, and they were both DID. They had multiple personalities. They had some personalities that were decent, good parents. They had some personalities where there were things that were lacking, but that's the case with all parents. And yes, in some cases they were just psychotic and evil and insane and Yeah, it was just really messed up. And I'm Jewish. I wouldn't wish what I went through on Adolf Hitler. All I could say.
Wow. So tell us what your mother did to you.
If you want to share, you don't have to. If you want to share, you can, but I don't want you to feel like you have to share.
No, you don't have to if you're not ready.
No, I'll keep sharing. I feel I need to. I mean, my father, well, I guess it's maybe a little easier to talk about things with my father because, you know, he wanted me to be like a bodybuilder and be a tough guy and, you know, be like a, you know, be like in a Navy SEAL or Delta Force or Army Ranger or Green Beret or whatever. And, you know, sorry, pardon the language, but be scoring with drop dead gorgeous supermodels all the time and everything and all that stuff. And when I was 13, he began telling me things like, you know, Adolf Hitler was right in what he did. And it's like, yes, we're Jewish. And yeah, that kind of blew my mind. And he would say things like, sometimes when women say no, they mean yes. And that also kind of blew my mind. And he was always arguing with me about everything, even as a child. And he did horrible things to me. And, of course, I was always afraid he'd hurt me or kill me or whatever. But in some ways, it was even worse than with my mother, if you can believe that. It just,
So you said your parents had PTSD and were DID and all that stuff. Did you find this out later? I mean, you had to. You wouldn't have known as a child what was going on.
Well,
so where,
all I knew
where
is,
did what happened?
Well, all I knew is one as a child, I could sense that they had their issues from their upbringing. But they would talk to me about they would talk to me about their marital problems with each other. And then two, tell me about negative things and bad things they went through growing up, which of course I didn't need to hear about, but they were always crying to me about all their problems, whether their marital problems with each other, their current life problems, their growing up life problems, or...
Man, that's heavy.
So, yes, and as I talked to the psychiatrist at Rutgers, he said, well, Doug, why don't you tell them? It really bothers you. And it's like, and I was trying to explain to him. I've been trying to, you know, tell him that since at least I was in high school, and he didn't understand complex PTSD or anything. It's just like he lived in some sort of super bleeding heart liberal fantasy world that if Doug just listens to the advice I give him, that will make everything better. But it's just like, no, it doesn't work like that. People don't, audience don't listen. It's just like people are just going to do what they're going to do. And, you know, and if you're dependent, well, then it's like you have to, in some ways, you're just going to have to take it because there's nowhere else for you to go. I mean, you know, unless you want to live on the street, and that's a danger. That's a danger there. And then even if child welfare gets involved, there's still a danger there. So, you know, that's the thing about being a dependent when you're growing up is that, you know, you're at the mercy of people who have power over you. You know, people like to.
I love it when Tammy talks about how we don't need to be the parents. The parents should have been the parents. Tammy, talk about that, because that is so empowering when you talk about that.
Well, the parents should be the parent. Well, you know, sometimes they do. We are put into to the opposite roles. You know, like Doug just talked about. You know, he had to be the he had to be the person who was there for his sister to lean on. So, I'm not sure what conversation we're talking about. That I must have got on a rampage one time, but you're absolutely right. You know, we can be put in that situation, especially children who are neglected, you know, or, you know, there's absent parents where the children have to step up and be put into the parental role, or, you know,
right.
You know, the child is, you know, even having to be the one who has to do the housework, or has to, you know, be there to be the supporter. You know, I remember my mother, you know, taking, you know, trying to take sleeping pills. You know, she'd wait until she was in front of us and throw them in her mouth. And you could imagine, you know, here's, you know, these young children, me and my sister, you know, trying to dig pills out of my mother's mouth. You know, children shouldn't be put in that situation. If she was the child, we were the parents, you know, trying to save her. So, you know, it's dysfunctional, unfortunately. And, you know, sometimes people can just be cruel, you know, and just like Doug was talking about, his dad just saying things, you know, being Jewish and saying things that he has to know is wrong just to put torment on us. And it's really hard because, you know, what is so confusing to children is, you know, the people who are abusing us, the people. You know, sometimes it's constant, but sometimes, you know, you're in this family setting. It happened at my house. We'd be in this family setting. We'd be having dinner. Everything was supposed to be normal. There's my mother. There's my stepfather. There's the two children, me and my sister and I sitting there like a family. And then, you know, then next thing you know, you've got this other stuff going on. And it's confusing to a child because these are the people who are supposed to protect us and, you know, look out for us and take care of us. And, you know, here they are, the ones abusing us, and it's confusing. And I remember one lady, she was a child psychologist that came on, and she interviewed, she worked with children, but she, you know, she was, we had interviewed her. I think I was hosting that night. But she said, one of the common threads that I have when I interview children is, you know, they don't want their parent to be taken off to jail. They just want the abuse to stop, you know, and that's huge. You know, because a lot of times, you know, they're taken off to foster care and they endure that or even worse. And that's one of the reasons why children keep their mouths shut, because of the unknown. You know, they've dealt with this. They've learned, they've developed coping mechanisms to deal with it. And, you know, if they're extracted from the home, you know, whatever portion of a normal life they have is gone. And, you know, they just want the abuse to stop. And that's tough. I don't know. That's just what came off the top of my head. What are y'all's thoughts? All mics are open.
Well, I just wanted to say something to Doug. And check me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like, you know, you had to be as a young adolescent, you know, 12, 13, I don't know how old, but very young, you had to be a referee between your parents bickering, fighting, and arguing, and all that problems they were throwing at between them, and then you're thrown in this mix to try and be the adult and referee it, and then all of a sudden, after that, it turns on you, and they start using you for a punching bag, you know, and I could see how that could be considerably confusing and hurtful and just blow your mind, you know, like you said. I don't know if I'm right, but that's how I seem to hear what you were saying, that you had to take in a lot, you know, that you shouldn't have had to take in, and plus, you know, everything, the abuse and all. I just feel for you, and but I'm just going to keep encouraging you to be here. You know, you can share. You're not. We believe you. We can, you know, we're behind you. So I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, that's good, Mark. This is Pamela. Doug, is your sister still living?
Yes, but she had a totally different experience. I don't think... I know she had to deal with some, like, emotional verbal abuse and emotional neglect, but I think I was the lightning rod. I got the bulk of... So, you know, she, you know, according to her, she doesn't understand why I don't have anything to do with our parents. So
was she younger than you?
Yeah, she was about 4 years younger. I, even when we were young kids, I knew there were things in the house that weren't right, so I did my best to look out for her and protect her. And
that's wonderful.
She did her best. Yeah, she did her best to look out for me. And if she wasn't born, I don't think I'd be talking on this phone line right now. She's
kind of been your inspiration to keep on going.
Yes, and even though we really have been on speaking terms in over 20 years, the bottom line is the childhood memories I have of her kind of help keep me going.
That's good. So does she kind of side with your parents thinking they couldn't have done what they did to you?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I would assume. So that ends up becoming a loss, you know. You've lost that love that you have.
Right.
Yeah, that love between you two, the connection between you two that was there. And that's what happens in abusive families. Like me and my sisters, we can't have a connection because, you know, hurt and so much pain, and when we get together we just can't keep away from it, you know what I'm saying? I can't be around my sister because she blames me because what happened, like you said, Doug, didn't you say you used to kind of hurt your sister at one time, took some of your pain out on her?
Yes, I did. And like I said, when I was 13, a therapist told my parents that I was out of control, I was an at-risk youth, and I needed to be straightened out, tough love, anger management, discipline. And even at that age, I knew it would help me out. But of course, my parents said no. You know, so it was like, well, you know, yet someone who said, this is what you need to do to help Doug out, stay out of trouble and everything. And for whatever reason, they just refused to do it. So
and you were talking about the high expectations your dad had for you. It seemed like he was trying to relive his childhood through you.
That happens
a lot. Yeah.
Yes, both my parents are trying to do that. And look, I'm going to have to commit blasphemy here, but I could be the second coming and solve all the world's political, economic, and social problems and cure every disease known to the human race. And that still wouldn't be good enough. So,
yeah.
What do you want?
Because
I mean, I could be winning a Nobel, I could be winning a Nobel Peace Prize every week. And so, no, it's just.
Well, I'm not going to excuse what they did, but I do want to say that if they were traumatized too, and I don't know, wasn't their generation around the time of Hitler?
They were both born in 1945, around the time the Second World War ended. So they grew up in the 50s and 60s.
Right, but they were born around the 45?
Right. They were born in 1945.
Okay, so if they were born in 1945, then they were raised by people who had been really hurt, okay? So those people that raised them probably hurt them very badly.
And so I'm not excusing what they did, but, you know, they weren't capable parents to parent any children. You're breaking the cycle. Does your sister have any children?
Yes, she has two. I've never met them, but.
Oh, okay. Well, you're breaking the cycle of abuse, and you know, I think you're pretty good, strong on your healing journey right now. But the reason I say that, and I know you don't feel that, is because compared to what you've gone through, okay, that you're able to open up and talk to anybody is a miracle to me.
Yeah.
So I'm so proud of you, Doug, that you're opening up and letting it, and trusting us survivors to help you through this, okay? But you know I'm not, can you imagine what they probably lived through?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they went through horrible things, too.
And I learned that my mother's second husband was actually, I believe, sexually abused by his biological dad. And beaten. And so his sister was beaten and they were beaten. He was a very strict man. He was like 6'5" or something, played basketball. I mean, he was, you know, he was the all-star, you know, looked good on the outside, but he was a monster, okay? So I know my abuser was under a monster and the cycle continued. And survivors be advocates, like Tammy was saying in the beginning of the show, becoming advocates. Right, Tammy? Tammy?
Absolutely. I had it on mute listening to you guys. Yes, you're absolutely correct. You know, it's kind of a weird phenomenon that as we help other people, and it's not for everybody, but everybody can benefit from it if they so choose, you know, because there'll be some days that, you know, I'm crawling up in a fetal position and I just feel beaten up and I'm, you know, just beaten up on myself, and I'll call in on the show and I'll feel better. You know, helping other people helps us too. And that's what advocacy and that's what, you know, support groups are all about. You know, it's a win-win. There you go. Well, we are starting to go. We've got about 10 minutes left. Let me pull up the studio. We got 6 minutes and 32 seconds left. And I wanted to give a shout out to Dr. Jaime, whatever held him up. He is just such an amazing man. I'm sure he'll call Bill. Again, you know, our guest speaker is a hospice pastor. So he can get a call at any time if some of the people he's been working with, you know, is about to pass, and he makes that, you know, priority as he should. So we'll catch up with Dr. Jaime Romo. Anyone who is looking forward to hearing him, he'll be back with us. Thursday of every month. So thank you for that. Doug, you've been amazing to share, and you know it's an honor to hear, your story. And be a part of your healing process. And you know, again, you know, you have every right to be mad. I do pray that, you know, eventually, you know, you will work through the anger. And it's a work in progress, you know, a process. You know, we work in progress. You know, we go through different phases at different times. Right when I think, you know what, I'm past this, you know, something will set me back. You know, like I said, one of the things that set me back is when my abuser died. I have yet to cry. I did cry on my way back to Shreveport, but not for her. I cried for me. You know, I cried for that little girl inside of me. I have yet to shed a tear for her. And I know at some point I'm going to have to make peace with it. And, you know, I am kind of at peace because, you know, she's got the answer for what she did, not me, you know. So it's a tough situation. We've got about 3 minutes left. If Pamela, if you want to go through and give some final thoughts to Doug, and then we'll do the same with Mark, and then we'll give Doug a few minutes. So we'll start with you, Pamela.
Okay. So you said final thoughts for what?
enough of the show, and you know, for, with Doug sharing so much with us, yeah, he shared his heart and soul with us tonight.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did, and I think it was providential the way the show went tonight. And I want to say, everybody, send up a prayer for Dr. Jaime. You know, so whatever he's doing, it's for the Lord. And I just wanted to mention Dr. Jaime's book in case anybody wants to get a copy, Healing the Sexually Abused Heart, a workbook for survivors, thrivers, and supporters. So that sounds like a very good book for a practitioner or a survivor. And I want to thank everybody for coming on. Tammy, I want to thank you for hosting. Mark, thank you. And Doug, thank you. And that's it.
Cool beans. What are your final thoughts?
Who, me? Mark? Well, yeah, this is Mark. I just wanted to applaud Doug again. I said, keep calling in, Doug. You know, this is a place to talk. And even if you just want to listen sometimes, and you know, that's fine too. But, you know, I think, like Pam said, you're I think you're on your journey, and you're going to be good. You're gonna be okay. So I just say, you know, keep sharing with the NASCA family, because we're supporting you, and we're behind you, and we know that it wasn't your fault, and you're not to blame, and that you will get better.
Amen.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you for letting me share my story. I appreciate the fact that this is a safe place where I can be heard without judgment.
Absolutely.
Doug, you inspired us. Watching you grow inspires me to keep going.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mr. Doug, do you have some final comments that you'd like to make to the panel?
Well, like I said, I just I'm thankful, grateful, and you know, just make sure I keep coming to the NASCA phone line and family, and just to make sure, because the most important thing is, I mean, the most important thing in life is that we take care of ourselves and yeah, sometimes the emotional pain is so bad, it's like, it's, yeah, I need to vent.
Absolutely. We all need to vent sometimes. No doubt. Well, we are out of time. I would like to thank anyone who chimed in. We do know we have a lot of folks who stream in. Thank you for being here. Hopefully it helped you as much as it did me. Pamela, thank you so much for being here supporting me. Mark, thank you so much for supporting and trailing as well. Doug, it's a pleasure. Thank you for sharing. I'm honored to be part of your healing process. And I'm just going to say good night. God bless the children of the world, and God bless adult survivors of child abuse. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Love Talk Radio.